welcome back to EG's Future of Southampton event. In our final session today, we'll be discussing a cleaner, greener future for Southampton. 2 years after the launch of the Green City Charter saw a commitment to addressing some of the biggest environmental challenges facing the city, what is next for sustainability in Southampton? To tackle that, I am joined by Pete Boustred, Head of Green City and Infrastructure at Southampton City Council, Gary Whittle, Commercial Director at Meacher's Global Logistics, and Amanda Reynolds, Director at AR Urbanism. Thank you all for being here with EG today.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Pete, I will ask you to kick us off, if that's okay. I was wondering if you could set out the vision that the council had for the Green City Charter for Southampton when that was launched.
Yeah, thanks. So, when we launched it in the spring 2019, this was with a backdrop of a lot of interest in sustainability in the wider environmental agenda, very much generated by previously looking at a clean air zone for Southampton, very much focused on air quality. And as part of that, we engage with residents and businesses across Southampton. And it generated a huge amount of interest in terms of people really thinking about the future and the sustainability of Southampton and the wider area. So what happened there from that is obviously working with government, we identified that we did not need a clean air zone, chargeable clean air zone for the city. And the focus really was then seeing, well, what is next for Southampton? And very much the Green City Charter was really in response to the feedback from residents and from businesses. And really the vision for that charter is to support a cleaner, greener and more healthier Southampton, where we focus across kind of five key themes. One is really focusing on supporting improvements in sustainable energy and carbon reduction. The other being about supporting a cleaner air in the city. Then a focus on the wider kind of environmental and biodiversity to make sure really that the open spaces that we have in Southampton really support local residents and making sure that the biodiversity within the city is supported. We also then want to make sure that we make best use of our resources. So looking at how we manage our waste, recycling and water in particular. And then finally, sustainable travel, a real key and topical issue at the moment, and one that's really important for the Green City and the Green City Charter. So the Charter's there from a Southampton perspective to show our commitment over the next 10 years, but also really to bring the wider community together, the residents and businesses and other organisations across the city, so we can all be part of a cultural shift, really, in terms of supporting that sustainable agenda.
And what was the role, what was the responsibility that you saw for the real estate industry in its broadest sense when mapping out what needed to be done across those various areas?
So for that in particular, you know, we need for real estate and for development across the city to really think about the future, making sure that those developments are sustainable in terms of supporting renewable energies, but also making sure they are energy efficient. It's really important that we start to make sure that developments are looking at the latest technologies, making sure we can work with those developments to come forward in a sustainable way that are viable and really looking to the future, but also the wider layout of those developments, making sure, you know, they support quality open spaces, making sure that we can make sure those developments are green and attractive places that people want to live in the heart of the city centre as well is really important. Making sure we cater for everything from families to young professionals to older people, you know, the full range. And for us is about that quality, making sure that they are really livable locations, vibrant locations where people feel comfortable to live, work and have leisure. And it's all about that kind of urban city centre environment, where in part it's about making sure that people can do all of those activities in that location, and in part really reducing the need for travel in certain locations.
Amanda, how do we see these goals reflected in particular developments? And maybe we can talk here about the work of you and colleagues on the Mayflower Quarter, for example.
Oh, great. Thank you. Well, we were appointed to lead the new master plan development for the Mayflower Quarter at the beginning of this year. And we're in the middle of that process. So I can't really give you very much specifics in terms of what we're doing. However, we absolutely support the Green Charter, and we think it's fantastic that Southampton is proactively incorporating all these ideas and being able to focus these on proposals for the Mayflower Quarter, which is currently a very car-oriented. It's a massive area. It's 82 hectares. It has the railway station. It's right next to the city centre. It's got a connection to the waterfront, but it's a very poor connection, and it's right next to the port, at Port's cruise terminal as well. But it also has a major arterial route running straight through the middle of it, which tends to create barriers, etc. And all the businesses that are currently located in the Mayflower Quarter are very car oriented. So we see our whole approach is to develop a highly sustainable and far better connected piece of our inner city urban quarter. So we're designing a mixed use sustainable piece of the city centre, which will include residential, it will include a lot of business location opportunities, it absolutely will include green spaces and connected green spaces, particularly the connection between the railway and the waterfront. Southampton's got a fabulous waterfront, but at the moment through the Mayflower Quarter, it's very hard to get to, it's very hard to experience. A lot of people probably don't go there to get to the water, whereas it's got fantastic potential. So making it connected in terms of travel, contributing to the whole of the city centre, being a 15-minute city, if you like, 15-minute city centre, making it more walkable, supporting cycling through it, enabling much better use of public transport and reducing through vehicle use, if you like. Now, we're not trying to get rid of vehicles, particularly not delivery and, you know, disabled support cars. So there will be vehicle access to all the businesses and housing, etc., in the Mayflower Quarter. However, there won't be through routes, and a high level of car ownership will be discouraged, though, you know, we recognise this is all going to take time. The shift in behaviour patterns is really important. We're very pleased to find that there's already a sustainable energy centre. There's a district heating CHP unit currently located in the Mayflower Quarter. We see potential to expand that and connect it better to the new development and greater areas of existing development. There will certainly be an increase in density of occupation, both businesses and new residential. There's very little residential there at the moment, but it should become an attractive new quarter for people to live and work.
It sounds fantastic. Gary, what is the role of a local business, a local employer like Meetcha here, and how is I guess, how is this sustainability agenda, you know, shaping your approach to doing business?
Well, thank you, Tim. And just to very quickly support Amanda's comments, I think Southampton City Council should be applauded for what it's done in the last 3 or 4 years. And in my case, looking at the freight side, which is predominantly where my field of expertise is, I think it's been incredibly positive and proactive how they've viewed a consolidation centre that still 5 years on is very successful, sustainable in both ways, which is both economic and environmental, which is quite key because it's quite a used term. So specifically to answer your question, we've been operating a consolidation centre for freight movements in and out of the city now for 4 or 5 years and been working with Pete and his team. And that's been incredibly successful, taking a significant amount of freight off the road and consolidating that. The freight on the road is exactly the same, but the number of vehicle movements is reduced significantly as a consequence. And not only with the emissions of that brings, it's also congestion and pollution. And to UK PLC, Southampton is a major sort of gateway to and from both Europe and the rest of the world. So again, picking up Amanda's point, I think what we've managed to do is get business and public sector collaborating. I think Southampton City Council should be applauded. They reached out to businesses like myself and others and asked our opinions. That's not the first time that's happened, but it's the first time I've actually known anybody and act on what they're being told by business. So I think from our perspective, very pleased with the outcome. And as a born and bred Sutonian, why would I not want to improve the region? Yeah. And I think if that's the starting position for any discussion, then I can't understand why people wouldn't be around the table. People wouldn't be buying and adopting what we're trying to do here.
Great.
Pete, during these early years of the charter, are there initial wins that you'd be able to point to? I don't know, low-hanging fruit, as it were, that show the value of this initiative?
Yeah, I mean, so if I just focus initially on Southampton City Council as an organisation, because I think there's two elements for Southampton City Council in regard to the Green City Charter. One, firstly, is about supporting this kind of cultural shift, making sure everybody in the city and everything they do starts to think about their actions and think about sustainability and a sustainable future. So for us, it's about generating that cultural shift. And the likes of key businesses like Gary's with Meacher's is making sure, you know, what they do, they feel part of this wider green agenda and supporting that sustainable future. So as with some of the kind of quick wins for us is making sure that we're starting to generate that cultural shift, making sure organisations and residents have a focal point to have those discussions, because previously there wasn't that kind of grouping and that focal attention on the green agenda. So that's been a key part of this. And then the second key element from a city council perspective is our Green City Plan. Now that sits in more detail alongside the Green City Charter, which sets a high level vision. The plan itself is looking over 10 years and is much more focused on the city council's areas of attention as it wants to lead by example. And I suppose as part of that, we've made sure that we have recruited additional officers to really focus and be dedicated in terms of driving that program, supporting the council's activities, but also then the wider organisations. But then also funding. So the council's brought forward additional funding, over £1 million of capital, and then ongoing revenue to support those programmes. And as it is embedded then within our wider corporate strategies. I suppose in terms of some of the low-hanging fruit or some of the work that we've been doing recently, it's things like looking at our bus fleet, for instance, where we've now got 100% of our bus fleet that are effectively Euro 6 compliant. So a lot of those buses are still running on diesel, but they are now the cleanest diesel engines that we can get. And also, where they've been older vehicles, we've been able to retrofit them with really interesting technology that means some of those older buses, where it's not yet been viable for bus operators to have the newest vehicles, have been able to put technology in to allow those vehicles effectively to be as clean as the newest diesel engines out there running. So we're really proud to work with our operators that, you know, they are commercial operators with their having to, you know, run with their own investment decisions, have been able to transform that fleet to be 100% clean Euro 6 compliant, which is fantastic. Other things, working across our kind of biodiversity, introducing new wildflower meadows. We've got 12 of those introduced now across the city to really enhance that biodiversity. We're continuing to double our tree planting regimes across the city. And then also the ongoing work to support our sustainable transport agenda. So increasing in cycleways, pedestrianisation, working with schools to think about how they can travel their children, parents and staff more sustainably.
How do you promote that dialogue between public and private sector here? I mean, Gary was mentioning the great level of cooperation that he's seen between the public sector and businesses. How do you ensure that this charter and the plan is really front and center for companies across the built environment when they're designing, when they're building, when they're trying to encourage that sense of community in their projects?
So I suppose in part we want to facilitate those conversations. So it's things like these events, but also others that we promote to ensure people are talking, ensuring developers and other organisations really supporting the built environment have a focal point to have those discussions, but also to provide that opportunity of sharing best practice and also setting out guidance as well through the planning process, which is something we're working on at the moment in terms of new design manuals to support how we want to see new buildings built and refurbished buildings. So which is something that we as a property owner, as a council, need to lead by example, but also ensure that new developments come forward. So, you know, they can support renewable energies, energy efficiency in their design, but also that wider piece in terms of the, you know, the place shaping, the wider areas of those developments to make sure they are really livable environments. So for us, we want to develop a network and bring all different types of organizations and campaign groups together to have that voice. And part of that is about setting clear guidance. The other part is about leading by example. And then finally, it's about, you know, bringing these conversations together.
Tim, do you mind if I just jump on the back of that? Because actually, there are a couple.
Please
of,
do.
There are a couple of bits that Pete and Pete's team have done that I think probably support what he's just said. So there are a number of projects, without going into much specific details, but there are a number of projects that we've worked with Pete and his team over the past. So and they facilitated that discussion. And they've also facilitated that in terms of subsidy and support in other areas. So we've looked at the cruise vessels, and there's an ongoing project between the cruise industry and the Southampton City Council, which I'm guessing is one of the very few in the country where public and private sector are working so closely together to integrate their own operations and have the synergy between both organisations in terms of collections and local deliveries. So the type of equipment, we're looking at using some of the top of the range stuff that Pete and Pete's team bought in, some electric vans, but just as I say, putting some synergy across that with the cruise vessels. We've got an ongoing project with both the hospitals in Southampton and on the Isle of Wight, where we're looking at, and Pete and Pete's team have subsidised delivery and servicing plans to support that activity. So there's a clear understanding of what logistically we can bring, how we can amend the supply chain to improve both, you know, environmentally and economically. So I think the other ones is the council led by example. So we have a number of projects where we've taken vehicles off the road, consolidated some of the council's own freight into our facilities and delivering that down to the council. So I think it's not just the facilitation process. They have led by example. They have been at the forefront of all of these discussions. And interestingly enough, the private sector has been quite slow initially to pick up on the work. And it's only now that we've got, I think, about five or six delivery and servicing plans lined up. So we've got the council on the Isle of Wight, we've got their hospitals on the Isle of Wight, we've got Portsmouth City Council talking to us, we've got the hospitals, we've got the universities. We've done a whole project which Pete and Pete's team has funded around the halls of residence and how we can consolidate inbound freight for that. And we're talking significant numbers of vehicles off the road. We're talking a significant number of NOx emissions and emissions generally being taken off, but also underlying all that is there is a real benefit to UK PLC as well as the individual entities, private entities that are getting involved. And that's really been Southampton City Council along with ourselves driving that change. And I think he's being very modest when he says they're doing as much as they can. They're doing an incredible job currently.
That's great to hear.
That's the last piece of niceness to you, Pete. That's it, we're done now.
Thanks, Dan.
Amanda, how does the COVID pandemic change the sustainability agenda or reinforce the need to prioritise that agenda?
Well, it does reinforce the need to prioritise it, but it also brings to the fore a word that a lot of people are using a lot more, which is resilience. And we need to be building in resilience to all the different threads of urban living. I think so far we've been thinking of it in terms of physical things, but it's also, it's as COVID is having an impact on the way we live and the way we work, we need to develop resilient social patterns as well. So that could be something as simple as looking at the way new flats are designed to incorporate places that people can work from home, as there may be consistently more working from home or potentially more going in and out of lockdown where people need to work from home. The other thing that, so that's a kind of resilient dwelling type, if you like, more resilient dwelling types. But the 15-minute walkable, cyclable city definitely is a very good thing for COVID because it means people won't have to drive, which keeps the emissions down. But also people are able to either get to their places of work, get to shops, etc., by being outside, either walking or cycling, but without still being able to keep social distancing and still being able to keep their lives going. But that also brings up the question of the quality of the public realm. And I think Pete was using the term, you know, place shaping. One of the things that we in the urban design industry, we talk about place making a lot. We're not just designing how buildings and streets are arranged together. We're designing places that should have a distinctive identity and that people will love. And a particular quality that has come out of attractive urban spaces during COVID is immediate access to open space, where people are able to exercise pleasurably very close to where they live and with good social distancing, and builds energy and pleasure back into their lives. And we think certainly the Mayflower Quarter, we're looking at integrating a lot of new green space, which people will have very immediate access to, and as well as connecting to the waterfront, which is a fantastic place. And we all know walking along waterfronts, being by the water, gives us all feelings of pleasure and energy, etc. So, you know, COVID is come at these things are always going to turn up at difficult times, aren't they? However, I think it's brought us an opportunity to reinforce the cleaner, greener approach to life and look at how it's going to impact our lives more generally. But basically keep supporting moves towards sustainable urban development.
Can I just expand on one of the words that Amanda used there, which I think is absolutely key in the freight industry, which is resilience. I think one thing that COVID has demonstrated is that supply chains need to be incredibly robust. I think we all remember queues of people trying to buy toilet rolls and, you know, queuing up in the very early stages. But more importantly, what I think it's identified is the role that supply chains play in everyday society. So I think there's an understanding people are now looking for more robust supply chains. I think they're looking for more economical, environmentally friendly supply chains. But also I do think there's an understanding that health is number one. And actually, when we have poor pollution, poor air quality in a region, then we have to do something, we're duty bound to do something about that. And that means a change. And I do think COVID is, I'm trying to think about that, this putting as a sort of negative positive, but I think there's an expectation of change. There's almost a demand for change now. And I think one of the big problems with the consolidation centre in the early days is where it wasn't perceived as there was enough justification to change the supply chain, because why bother if it's not broke? What's clear is people are now willing to have a look at things and just rethink the way they operate.
I think to add on that, Gary, you know, it's people are wanting, you know, change, but I think lockdowns also, it gave people a chance to kind of pause and reflect on what they do in their lives, you know, taking it to that kind of level. And I suppose as linked to that, it really exposed a range of extremes, shall we say. I mean, if you look at the peak of lockdown, you know, and the transport network, you know, people saw the extremes of what, you know, quiet streets looked like. But then as things changed, you also saw the extremes about the pressures on our open spaces. So as locally, there were huge pressures on our very local public open spaces to really cater for the fact that people really need that space for health, for leisure and activity. So some of our city centre locations where when people weren't really allowed to travel very far, you know, there were a lot of challenges there to make sure we could accommodate people in a safe way. But then as things change, you know, people have seen transport, they've seen travel behaviours change, traffic levels increase. So in such a really tight period of time, 3 or 4 months, you've almost seen the evolution of transport over a kind of 40-50 year period. It accelerated over a kind of 3 month period, which has been quite fascinating from a transport planning perspective. But very interesting to see how human behaviors have adapted, and some of the positive and the negatives, when you only have to look at some of the impacts on littering and other things that have really come about as people have been, you know, having, you know, the demand and the extremes have really come to the fore. So it is one where we certainly want to learn and adapt. And I suppose examples of that have been, you know, some of our campaigns around littering and other things to really bring that back to the forefront of people's minds, really, moving forward.
Do you think that as we prioritise these areas, this will encourage greater investment in Southampton? Does this increase the city's attractiveness as a destination for investment and development?
Well, definitely. I mean, if for investors, I would say if it's got a local authority who supports and actively encourages this kind of policy, this kind of direction, and it's underpinned by established policy in the council as well, I would certainly expect it to attract people to live there and hope also, though I'm sure Gary can answer this better, hope it would also attract businesses that can see that the future is green. And I see this morning the CBI has come out and said to the government that the ongoing rebuilding of the economy has got to have a green basis to it, or else we're really going to suffer. We've got, you know, COVID. It's probably no accident. COVID is coming as at the same time as climate change seems to be accelerating. So we really need to respond quickly and build in these good actions.
I think the other thing, Tim, as a recognition as operating a business as we do in the city, I think we've got to get this balance right. We want a vibrant city from a business perspective. That's what's going to attract new investment inward investment. But you want to get that balance right for being a very vibrant, you know, region, but also being a nice place to live. And I think there's a recognition that you can actually have both. They're not uniquely separate. And I think what the council have tried to do with the Green City Charter is just walk that very fine line. We can resolve congestion because we shut down the docks and we get rid of all manufacturing. Great place to live, impossible place to work. So I think, yeah, absolutely. So I think we have to get the recognition that the balance right. And I think we are, it's an industrial location, it's a port city predominantly, so there's a recognition of that. And I think what we have to do, and I think what people are trying to do, is just incorporate that in the end solution, and then just enhance what we have. And I think Amanda talking quite rightly about the seafront, the waterfront element, let's just adopt that, let's just understand that and have a place for business and have a place to live and work that we're proud of. And I think we're getting there.
Well, as we strive for that balance and as we continue to prioritise these various threads of the sustainability agenda, I wonder if I could, as we draw this to a close, just ask each of you maybe to offer one perhaps bold step that you'd like to see Southampton taking as a city. And I mean, we've discussed plenty of them. There are many of them already in the works. But if you could point to one element of the sustainability agenda that you're really excited about seeing the city grasp and take advantage of, what would that be? And Gary, I wonder if I could start with you as you talk about striking that balance along the way.
Thank you, Tim. I'm going to give the other two plenty of opportunity to think about their answers. simplistically, I'd like to see better use of consolidation. I'd like to see better use of technology in terms of equipment and supply chains. So I think we're on the way there. I think Southampton as a region is probably at the forefront in the UK, but we can do more. So I think having a greater use of technology, having a better integrated public and private usage around consolidation, because the way consolidation works is economies of scale. So the more people we get adopting it, the better it will become, and it will be exponentially better the more people come in. So I think a nice push around the consolidation centre, being that I'm biased, I operate it, but in principle, I think that can only improve if we get better management of supply chain and freight. It will significantly improve the region.
Excellent. Amanda, some thoughts from you perhaps?
I think a really important thing that the city has done is commissioned us to do the Mayflower Quarter. I mean, I would say that, wouldn't I? But the brief is very clear. You know, the Mayflower Quarter is a massive area of land. It's going to double the size of the city centre in terms of area. But the council's been very clear in their brief that they want a future-looking development proposal that incorporates all the aspects of their new new commitments, and the Green Charter forms the basis to that. They want better access to the waterfront. They want a better connected city centre that better supports existing and businesses and attracts new businesses, but absolutely attracts people who want to come and live here as well. And it's interesting to talk about transport. Yes, one of the strong recognitions is Southampton's a port city. It's about movement. It's about movement of goods and movement of people. At the moment, it's poorly connected. You know, movement requires good connections. And one of the things that we really see as very important is massively improving its connectivity as part of a city. And that will really help with the green focus.
I think it absolutely will. And Pete, over to you for some final thoughts.
Yeah. There's a lot within our Green City plan that are really bold and challenging. I suppose just to pick one link to our kind of challenges with clean air is our ongoing work with our public transport operators as an example, really. So, I mean, we've got a compliant fleet in terms of Euro 6 diesel, but to looking forward over the next 10 years, we really want to move towards a zero emission public transport system in the city by 2030. That's a huge challenge working with the operators, but you know, there is a great opportunity because of the ongoing partnership working with the bus operators. We've got about 22 million bus passenger movements a year within the city. Public transport within Southampton really bucks the trend against, you know, the national decline in some areas of bus travel. But in Southampton, that's not the case. And what we want to do is make sure bus passengers really can see that they are really travelling by one of the cleanest and greenest methods of travel around for local journeys. So ongoing work with the bus operators would be a real bold statement if we can get to that zero emission public transport system by 2030.
Brilliant.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, that about draws not just this panel to a close, but also today's Future of Southampton event from EG. So it just remains for me to thank my panelists here, but also everyone else who's joined us over the course of today's discussions. Thank you again to our partners on this event, Savills, Shoesmiths, ACOM, Southampton City Council, and ACES. And of course, thank you for tuning in. Bye for now.